Hey guys, real quick, before I get into this episode, I wanted to make sure I addressed a couple of mistakes that I made in my earlier segment, just because I was just so caught up in the moment, and I'm just very passionate about this subject. But instead of saying George Floyd, I keep referring to the football player, Greg Lloyd. But it really, you know, I wanted to make sure that I apologize to the families and to everyone listening out there. So I wanted to correct it before you actually listen to the show. I know his name is George Floyd, but like I said, I was just getting caught up in the passion of the segment, and I mentioned him a couple of times as Greg Lloyd. So I just wanted to apologize real quick. I really hope you enjoy the show, and this is my disclaimer, and I do apologize for that. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yo, what's happening, y'all? What it do? What it do? What it do? You are listening to The Bounce House. I am your host, the only one, Surrender. And as usual, y'all, we're going to get it in tonight. Tonight's topic is something that's actually really near and dear to my heart. I know the past couple of episodes, I've had some guests come on the show and sit down and we talked about some pretty fun things, but tonight is going to be a little bit different. Tonight I'm going to kind of go back into the mode when I first started out. Tonight is just going to be me talking, and the reason why I didn't want to bring anybody on tonight is because I felt like I really had to get things off of my chest. It's been a very, very emotional past 2 weeks. Really emotional week that I had going out protesting a couple of the nights, and you know, hopefully I'll have the time to be able to get out there again and to protest some more. And I'm going to go over that before I actually get into the topic that I want to get into tonight, or that I'm going to be discussing tonight. But I really wanted to take my time tonight and talk about the history of gangs and gang violence, and because we always hear whenever there's some type of issue of a black person getting murdered and the black community is crying out for justice, there's always a deflection that comes up. There's always a deflection of, or the question that comes up and says, well, what about black on black crime? You hear it all the time. It's an excuse that some of the right-wing media likes to bring up as a counter-argument to take your focus off the injustices that happens. Now, first of all, I'll be the first to say that black-on-black crime, for one, has actually absolutely nothing to do with systemic racism or systemic oppression and injustice brought forth by police department. So one has nothing to do with the other, okay? So I just want to make sure that we are clear on that. But it's always brought up, black on black crime. So before I get into that, I don't want to lose track because I'm really passionate about all of this, and I want to make sure that I stay on track and that I'm staying in tune to the message that I'm trying to get across tonight. So, but before I do that, I want to talk about George Lloyd. I want to talk about George Lloyd. I want to talk about the protest that's been happening around America It seems like America is waking up and there is a transformation that is happening. And I want to just real quick discuss in this first part of my show, the first segment of my show, is just discuss what my experience was like and what it felt like for me to actually be out there on the front line protesting with my brothers and sisters, standing in solidarity with white brothers and sisters, Asian brothers and sisters, Latino brothers and sisters, gay, transgender, you name it, you know, just standing arm in arm, everybody screaming for justice. I could tell you, for me, it was a very overwhelming experience. For me, why I went out there, for one, yeah, let me just go over that real quick and why I felt the need to actually go out there on the front line and protest, why I felt I needed to go out there with a bullhorn and scream loudly to be to partake in and do my small part. I'm just a small voice in an ocean of many, but I felt compelled to do my part on many, many, many reasons. One of the main reasons is, ever since I was young, the first major case that I can really think about in my generation was Rodney King. We saw the videotape of Rodney King getting the snot beat out of him by six officers. And it was no denying the man was getting the snot beat out of him. There was already racial tension going on in the Southern California area at that time where I grew up. And because prior to Rodney King, another young lady got shot and killed inside of a local Korean market arguing over orange juice. And there was no justice for that. So there was already tension that was building up in the community down there. Okay. So I'm trying not to make this long, but I just wanted to let you know why I was out there protesting this weekend or this past week. What really drives me. Rodney King is the first one that I can think of. Everybody thought, oh man, we finally have the police officers on tape. These are experiences that I went through as a teenager growing up. These are things that I've seen in my neighborhood of San Bernardino in the Inland Empire, the IE, growing up. I seen, witnessed police brutality with my very own eyes on many occasions. So this was for the very first time we thought, oh man, there is finally going to be justice that's going to be served. Lo and behold, every officer that partook in the beating of Rodney King was acquitted. We know the history. From there, the LA riots of 92 took place, and it was a lot of damage, a lot of people who got hurt. But out of that was a gang truce, and I'm going to get more into that later on in the show as well, because I want to go back to this whole black-on-black crime. And if you want to bring it up, people want to bring it up, then I'm going to discuss it. I'm going to talk about it. So I want to fast forward to Oscar Grant, when Oscar Grant was murdered back in, I believe it was 2010 at the BART station. I want to say that the officer that murdered Oscar Grant, all in all, ended up only serving like 13 months in the county jail for murdering a man who was handcuffed on his knees. Justice was not served. Then comes the protesting. After the protesting, then comes the spinning of the narrative. These aren't protesters. They're in the middle of the highway. They're rioters. They're acting like animals. These people are violent thugs. They're not protesters. Then we have Trayvon Martin. We know the story with young Trayvon. Every time I see a picture of Trayvon, my eyes typically well up because every time I see it, man, I just feel the pain. It's an emotional topic. But it was the same thing with Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin gets murdered. Zimmerman gets off. Justice isn't served. Protesting begins. What happens? The right-wing media, they come out. They sway the narratives. They're thugs. They're violent. They're not protesters. They're destroying buildings. They're destroying cars. And the list goes on and on. Same with Michael Brown. Same with Eric Gardner. Same thing with Philando Castile. Ferguson. And the story is always the same. With Stephon Clark in Sacramento. The story is always the same. It's look at these thugs. Look at these BLM. Black Lives Matters aren't nothing but thugs. They're terrorists. They're burning down buildings. They're looting. The narrative gets switched. While I'm sitting back taking witness to all this, and I'm saying to myself, that's not the protesters. That's not the peaceful protesters. But even with all the information and all the video and everybody being able to record nowadays, we know there's other groups out there like Antifa. There's Proud Boys. There's the alt-right movement that's out there. That's causing chaos, that's causing a lot of the agitation. Already throwing gasoline on a fire that's already big. But they're just dousing it with more gasoline by inciting intimidation, fear, anger. And then the right media, right-wing media goes out and they spin the narrative. Look at these animals doing what they do. They're thugs. They're not protesters. When this happened with Greg Lloyd, I noticed the narrative was starting to be switched once again. They didn't quite character bash him in the beginning. Okay? Because after the thugs and look at these looters and the narrative being switched to where the actual murder is being drowned out. The actual crime that was committed is being strangled out. The next thing they do after that is they decimate the character. They villainize the person who got murdered. So it didn't quite happen with Greg Lloyd in the beginning. We're seeing that now. They're trying to vilify him now. They want to talk about his past. They want to talk about what he used to be and not what he was. And they want to talk about everything else, but aside the fact that the man was laying on the ground with his handcuffed, with a knee in his neck, crying out for his mother in his last breath. For me, after all this time, I said to myself, there is no way. This murder is as blatant and as plain as day. They're not going to hijack another murder while I'm alive. They're not going to switch the narrative. So Minneapolis, you see the police station burning down. You see buildings burning down. There's reports of officers dressing up in all black like Antifa going out there starting fires and busting buildings themselves, shooting rubber bullets, shooting tear gas into the crowd, inciting more fear, more agitation, more anger, throw more gas on an already emotionally charged crowd because people are angry. People are tired. We're tired of seeing it. So that was why I went out there last week on Tuesday, on Friday. Actually, I went out a week prior to last week as well. I was actually out there in front of the courthouse by myself for about 2.5 hours protesting with my bullhorn. Because I'm tired. And every time I see another video like this, every time I witness another murder online, my heart just can't take it. I literally well up with sorrow, with anger, with frustration. So that was why I was out there. But I tell you, when I was out there, it was quite the experience because I didn't know what to expect in Redding. We know here in Redding, California is predominantly white. We have a lot of good old boys out here. We have militia out here. A lot of Trump supporters. There's a lot of bikers. I didn't know what to expect. I had no idea. There was a protest that was planned. And then that protest got canceled because there was a lot of people fearful of fear of Antifa coming out and destroying the city. And there was going to be a big clash between the police, Antifa, and then the good old boys that we have out here. But I'll be damned if I was going to let that silence me. So I went out. I went out and I stood and I protested and I chanted, "Black Lives Matter, say his name. Say her name, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd." I chanted and shouted as loud as I possibly could, with fervor, with anger, with frustration, with every fiber of my being. While out there, I witnessed somebody get hit by a truck. Some woman's foot got ran over. I witnessed guys jumping out of a truck. A fight almost broke out. Then I witnessed a group, which at the time I thought were all together. I later learned that they were not all together. I found out later on that night that they were actually a separate group from one another. And that they were not all together. But some of them were militia. Some of them were local groups. But to me, in that moment, at that time, all I saw was green army fatigues, bulletproof vests, some guys packing guns. And I'm thinking to myself, why? We're peacefully protesting. We're peacefully protesting the murder of a man. Of course, you had some of the agitators when you scream Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. Yes, some people get in other people's faces. A couple of fights almost broke out. Had to hold the line. Hey, hold the line. Don't act out. The last thing you want is for the media to call you an animal. You're not an animal. You're not a thug. You're not here to destroy buildings. Do not let them twist this narrative. What got me out of all of this, it didn't really hit me until I went out to the protest on last Friday. I actually stopped and I stood back and I watched all the young people that were out there chanting Black Lives Matter, protesting peacefully. Operating within their constitutional right, the right way. Friday night didn't have as much tension as Tuesday night. And there's a reason for that. But I got the opportunity just to inhale the young people. My emotions were really high. And that's what really, to be honest with you, that's what took me so long to actually record this episode. Because I really had to absorb the moment. There was so much going on that I had to absorb the moment. There is still so much going on in our country. So much going on. So my experience through all of this was, never was there a moment of fear. Even when I was trapped in the middle of the crowd, and I actually had some friends of mine who were actually Trump supporters who were looking out for me, my brothers. We don't see eye to eye politically. We never will. but they're still my brothers. And they were looking out for me. And they were out there. And they text me and they said, hey, man, there's about 120 more militia coming your way. The cops are down the street in full riot gear. Looks like they're going to try to squeeze the protesters in. You might want to get out of there. I stayed a little bit longer before deciding to leave. I left about 10 minutes before the protest actually ended. Thank God nothing happened. Thank God that, you know, it didn't turn into something ugly, which it could have. But I believe that night something miraculous happened. And instead of ending in hate, it ended in a peace talk. The police actually, a couple of them, laid the batons down and walked with some of the protesters. Now, was it a PR stunt? I don't know. I can't say. I don't know what was in those guys' hearts. I don't know. It would be all speculation if I said. But for me, standing out there, realizing that this is our moment in history to change the world. I've read about Martin Luther King. I read about the Civil Rights Movement. I've read about the Black Panther Party, Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, Fred Hampton. I've read about Malcolm X in the fight for Black equality in America. Never had I ever felt like I had to go and represent my Black side like ever before. I mean, I have. Let me rephrase that. Never have I felt the fervor to go out and represent my Blackness like never before. In that moment with that bullhorn, I was thinking of my great-grandfather, who was a Buffalo soldier. I was thinking about my granddad on my dad's side, who was chased out of Mississippi by the Ku Klux Klan. I was thinking about my upbringing in Southern California, growing up in a broken community, being part of a gang, surrounded in a gang culture, being able to grow out of that and still have love for my brothers and sisters in the community. It was a sense of pride. It was a moment of heritage, of fighting. It was overwhelming. I got in my car, hopped on the freeway heading home, and I cried. I cried because it wasn't just George Floyd I was protesting for. It was George Floyd. It was Breonna Taylor. It was Sandra Bland. It was Eric Gardner. It was Tamir Rice. It was Trayvon Martin. It was Oscar Grant. It was Rodney King. It was all the Black lives that were taken for no reason. Heinously murdered. It was for Black Wall Street. It was for Rosewood. It was for my ancestors that were brought over here on slave ships, chained and shackled. I broke down on the way home. And I had to absorb it. It took me a while to absorb it. I know the next day I had to get a podcast together because I wanted to bring peace in our city. So I wanted one of the groups that was there that I thought was militia to clear the air. And I partnered with my brothers. And we combined our podcasts because they're mainly right-wing conservatives. And I'm more of an independent. I lean a lot towards the left, but I do hold some conservative views. But I'm mainly an independent. But I wanted to partner and and make sure I cleared the air with one of the groups that was there. And I totally misunderstood them. And I had to apologize myself because I was so worked up. I labeled them as white supremacists. I labeled them as militia, and that group wasn't. When they explained their heart and what they were really trying to do and what they really were trying to accomplish, I had them totally wrong. And I had to apologize. I had to be a man. But I was worked up in emotion. So that's what I was feeling that day when I was out there protesting. That's my opening segment tonight. I know it's a longer one than I normally give. But I just wanted to share my experience, why I was out there and what I was feeling. And I want to tell you, man, seeing those young people out there protesting, man, it brought joy to my heart. Because I seen white. There was majority white people out there. We had our brothers, my black brothers and sisters were out there. But the majority were white. And they were standing, protesting fervently, side by side in solidarity. But what I enjoyed most is it was the younger generation. This generation that often gets bashed for being the Tide Pod eating, internet, social media challenge generation. But they decided to take a stand and say, nope, no way, not in our time. Racism needs to end. Justice needs to be served. It was a beautiful thing to see. It really was. That's my opening segment, y'all. I said that already, but I'm saying it again right now. I'm going to take a quick break because I really want to get into the topic of the night, and I hope I don't take long. I already took like around 25 minutes just for this opening segment, which is usually like 10 minutes or so. So bear with me on the show. It is an important one. Hopefully you're getting something out of this, and I'll be right back. You know what it is. You're bouncing with the Bounce House. I am your host, the only one, Surrender. Let's bounce, y'all. Welcome back to the Bounce House, y'all. I'm your host, the only one, Surrender. I want to thank y'all for bouncing with me. And real quick, before I get into the actual main part of the show, if you like the show and you're loving what you're hearing, become a supporter. You can become a supporter and a fan of the show if you go to my Anchor page. If you want to show your support and become a monthly subscriber or member, please feel free. You just go to my Anchor page at One Surrender at the Bounce House, and you will find it. You can go on there and you click the link and you're good to go. If not, if you just want to share the show, you enjoy it so much and you want to share it, please, please, by all means, like the page and share it with your families and friends. And you know what? Much love, and I appreciate all the support that I can give. Thank you for bouncing with me, y'all. So I want to get into this, man. Now, here's the real topic of the night. Now, whenever something like this happens with a George Floyd or any type of high-profile murder where an officer, a white officer, kills a black person, what typically happens is you get those who don't want to face the reality of the racism that still exists in America today. Or they're so irked and so irritated by hearing the term Black Lives Matter. They'll either say, well, all lives matter, as if, you know, those that are crying out for black lives are saying that no other lives matter. Now, we all know that that is not the case and that's not true. But that seems to be the consensus amongst those groups who oppose Black Lives Mattering. It's their way of dealing with the guilt complex. They don't want to admit that they're a racist, and maybe they're not a racist. Maybe they don't want to feel like they're feeling like a racist. I don't know what their reason is. Well, some of them I do. But one of the things they do a lot is they deflect, and they always bring up black on black crime. Now, I posted one of my earlier shows that I've done last season, one of my first shows, where I was just still learning and getting used to talking and just getting used to the whole podcast. I did it, and it was called The Truces on the Loose. It was about the gang truce between the Crips and the Bloods after the death of Nipsey Hussle. And I did a segment on that, and I really wish that I didn't take as many rabbit trails as I did back then, and stayed more on topic, because it's a very delicate topic, one that's near and dear to my heart. So I just want to kind of give you a history on black community and what that means and what it is. What is a black community? Because if you want to bring up black on black crime, we have to understand the history of black on black crime. And we have to understand the history of black communities in America. So in this case, I'm going to use Los Angeles as an illustration of what a black community, how it was established and how crime fell into place and what black people are doing to try to change their neighborhood. Because when you hear this, when I hear this, well, what about black on black crime? Well, what about it? You act as if though no organization is out there trying to help, that black people aren't trying to help our black kids from getting killed by the hand of the gun, by the hand of each other. I personally have taken responsibility. I didn't mention it to nobody, but I started taking personal responsibility around, I want to say 2013, 2014. I vowed to never ever share any video with two black guys beating on each other. I vowed to never share a world star hip hop video where you got black on black crime. For me personally, I didn't want to glorify it. I don't want to glorify it. When I see it, it hurts my heart. So I made that vow a long time ago to myself. I'm never going to share that on my page, on any of my social media. You would never see a video like that. Now, if it's a comedy thing like a Ha Ha Davis or something, you know, one of these videos that was kind of birthed on how like Vine videos used to do it. And now you see the short ones. You know, I'll share something funny, hilarious, but you will not see me share anything that has to do with black on black violence. And that's my own personal thing. So when I hear, well, what about black on black crime? You act as if, though, that the black community is not trying to step up and do something about it. As if black mothers, black fathers aren't tired of seeing their kids dead in the street. Black grandmothers aren't tired of seeing their kids dead in the street. Like it's just business as usual. You paint this picture like, hey, we just think it's okay in the black community to kill each other as if we are doing nothing about it. So I want to give you a history real quick on how black communities were established. Okay. So in 1941, Franklin Roosevelt, he created an executive order, 8801, with it banned racial discrimination in wartime defense industries. So basically, blacks were able to get jobs in these companies that were making, that were manufacturing parts that that were used for the war, for World War II. So this opened up a big industrial sector for black Americans, for black Americans to fill them. Companies like Goodyear, Firestone, Chrysler, Ford, they were set up in South Central Los Angeles. Okay. You had clubs in the 50s. black clubs like the Devil Hunters, the Farmers, and the Huns. They were young black street clubs, not gangs, clubs. They were created to protect their neighborhood from, guess what? Violence by the police. 1965, we had the Watts Riot. The Watts Riot took place because Marquette Fry got pulled over on suspicion for drunk driving. Fry and his mother and his siblings were all taken into police custody. And this is at a time where the racial frustrations were already simmering over the city, over police brutality. So the city erupts into this big riot in 1965. And we know in those days, man, the racial tension was just thick in the 60s. They rioted for about 6 days. National Guard had to be called in. More than 34 people died, or around 34 people died, and thousands of people wounded in the 1965 Watts Riot. You hear a lot about the 92 riots, but you don't really hear much about the 1965 riot. But out of that birthed a whole new mindset. After the riots, street gangs began to organize, and these gangs are starting to organize, getting tongue-tied here. They partnered with the Black Panther Party. They were raising black awareness, black consciousness, big on education, big on politics, understanding the law and teaching the law, getting educated on the law, feeding their community, offering free health clinics for the community. Oh, but they carried guns. They were black nationalists. They understood their rights. They carried guns. Therefore, they were labeled as a terrorist group. Terrorist group that was wanting to fight the American government. J. Edgar Hoover declared a war on the Black Panther Party. Even though the black-on-black violence during that time decreased during the time of the Black Panther Party, Hoover wanted to declare war. So he dismantled the Black Panther Party, going after key leaders, even murdering one of their main leaders, Fred Hampton. After the demise of the Black Panther Party, a lot of the Black Panther Party members are either murdered, sent to prison on trumped-up charges. This information is out there. Look up Geronimo Pratt. Information is out there. Trumped-up charges. Because we were living in a time where authority was still abusing its power more than ever. Once the Black Panther Party was dismantled, then guess what you have in the neighborhoods? Right? They try to keep it going. Young man, 15 years old, Raymond Washington. He actually was the creator of the Community Revolution in Progress, also known today as the Crips. They try to keep it going. But around that time, there was a big economic decline. Businesses started moving out of the area. Poverty was starting to rise. Drugs were flooded in the streets. And you know that's a bad mixture. Drugs, poverty, no work, can't get a job. And this is also during a time, mind you, doesn't matter how educated of a black person you were, you had to be 10 times smarter and work 10 times harder than your white colleague in order to get a good position somewhere. These are facts. Facts. So now you have another group that forms, which is the Bloods. Now you have these two these gangs going at each other. Violence is increased. Then you have the crack epidemic of the 80s. Cocaine floods the streets. The crack epidemic runs the streets. Now you got people fighting over money, and the gangs just increase. Went through the roof. The violence is crazy. Almost every other night, I remember watching on the news drive-by shooting. 1984, I can remember hearing about Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. And then right after that, you hear about a drive-by here or a drive-by there. 1988, I was jumped into a gang myself. Because it's all I knew. It was all that I was surrounded with. I was familiar with it. Then Rodney King happened, and I'm getting to this what about black on black crime, okay? I'm taking my time because I really want to paint a picture. And what's happening today is no different from what was happening yesteryear. After the Rodney King incident, there was an actual truce in 1992 between the Bloods and the Crips. There was an organization that was put together that was going to help de-escalate and continue on the nonviolence, encouraging nonviolence between blacks in South Central Los Angeles. But nothing ever came of the organization. The organization folded, and it went on as business as usual. The truce was forgotten about. Because while it's in the media, when it's hyped up in the media, right, and it's hot news, everybody's eyes is on it. Everybody wants to say something. Some people might even want to step up and help out. But once it's no longer national news and everybody goes back to business as usual, you forget about these organizations. You forget about these black kids that are living in poverty in black communities, right? It's hard for a lot of them to get out of those communities because they've been there their whole life and they've been in poverty their whole life. And they've had to struggle their whole life. Work 10 times harder. Not saying that it's not possible. It's very possible. I made it out. I know a lot of people that made it out. But it's hard as hell. And sometimes you don't feel like you have any other way out when you're in that situation and in that environment. It's a fight. And you cannot see past what's in front of you. So there was a truce. But all of a sudden, nobody wanted to fund it. Nobody wanted to help. So it got dismantled. Streets went back to the way they were. You have black on black crime. You have black on brown crime. Right? I want to fast forward to last year after the death of Nipsey Hussle. Nipsey died. Now, Nipsey was a brother, man, who became a successful rapper, right? Businessman, philanthropist, and he never left his hood. He stayed right where he was at. He helped build his community. He sold back into his community. That's why he was respected by so many in the community and why they loved him so much. They loved him so much that even after he died, Bloods and Crips decided to lay their rags down, their colors down, and they decided to have a gang truce. Maybe one or two media outlets talked about it. I talked about it on the Bounce House, which I have a very, very, very small show, very small following. And at that time, it was even smaller. Because I still was doing my podcast on my phone. And then it went away overnight. No one talked about it. So my whole point is, if you want to talk to me about black on black crime, if you bring that up to me, I'm going to ask you, what are you doing to help black on black crime? If you are really concerned about black on black crime, what are you doing to help the situation? Are you going down to some of these black organizations? Have you even researched black organizations? Have you gone into these communities to see what's happening there, to see what kind of help these people need? Have you actually talked to some of the local leaders, some of the local pastors, some of the local politicians in that area to see what they're doing or what they need? Because if you haven't, I don't want to hear shit come out of your mouth about what about black on black crime. Because black on black crime means nothing to you but a political talking point to deflect systemic racism. I don't want to hear nothing about it. Whenever there's a truth, obviously, black on black violence decreases. But if you care so much about it, what are you doing to help out? I don't want to hear no shit like, oh, well, it's not my responsibility. Well, you're bringing it up. So you must be passionate about it. If you're bringing it up in an argument, then why isn't it your responsibility? You're an American citizen, are you not? When I hear Chicago, I want to know, what are you doing for Chicago? Have you gone down to Chicago? Have you met those black leaders in Chicago to see what they're doing? Have you? Because if you haven't, I don't want to hear shit about black on black crime. Don't tell me nothing. Because I know it's real. I know people in the black community know it's real. I know people in the black community are doing everything they can to stop black on black violence. But in the same breath you want to talk about black on black violence, you want to tell me you're a Tupac fan. You want to tell me you're an NWA fan. So it's okay to glorify some music that are out there. And I'm not saying Tupac's music is violent. That's not what I'm saying. Those are just the first things that popped in my head. But what I'm saying is you want to glorify the culture. And a lot of the hip-hop culture does amplify black-on-black crime and black violence and black masculinity, right? You want to glorify that. But you want to use it as a political talking point when we start talking about systemic racism and oppression and injustice. I don't want to hear shit you have coming out of your mouth unless you're actually doing something about it. Unless you're actually standing up against black on black crime. You say, well, why isn't Black Lives Matter protesting against black on black crime? I'll tell you why you don't see the large protests and masses for black on black crime. Because we know what goes on in our neighborhoods. We're there every day on the front lines fighting it. You're just not there. You're just not seeing it. You're just the one that's oblivious to it. And there is no platform for black on black crime. But excuse me for a moment. If we start talking about white on black crime, that's been happening for far longer than black on black crime, you want to get all uncomfortable and indignant. Where in the hell you think those guns came from in the black community? Are there any gun manufacturing companies in Chicago? How about Detroit? How about Los Angeles? How about in Atlanta? How about Miami? How about in the Fifth Ward? They have gun manufacturing companies there? How about poppy seeds? How about cocaine fields? You have cocaine fields in Compton, California? Do you have cocaine fields in Miami? No. It's brought here. It's flooded into our communities. How does it get flooded in? Well, you got to have money, right? You have to be somebody with some type of status. How are the guns getting in the streets? A young 15-year-old ain't going to make an AR-15. And don't make this about gun rights, because I'm for gun rights. I'm all for packing heat. I'm all for having a CCW and packing the heat. What I'm telling you is these 15-year-olds ain't getting guns in their hands because they made them. They're being flooded in the streets. And how are they getting there? So if you want to talk to me about black on black crime, let's address how they're getting the things into those neighborhoods that's encouraging black on black crime. Talk to me about the years of oppression that has caused the mindset in these communities to act out against one another. It's deeper than what you think it is. And if you don't know that, then don't tell me shit about black on black crime. I don't want to hear it. Because at that point, it's hot air and it's a political talking point. Political talking point because you have a guilt complex. How Malcolm X would put it, a white guilt complex. You don't want to feel like a racist. Well, hey, check it out. Newsflash. If you're not a racist, you don't have to feel like you're a racist. If you know in your heart of hearts you're not a racist, you don't have to go out of your way. But what you can do is stand in solidarity with your black brothers and sisters and say, man, I'm not racist, but I understand what you've been through. And if you don't understand, then say, please help me understand. And please help me understand doesn't mean I'm going to debate you till I'm blue in the face. Please help me understand me. Sit your ass down. Listen. Receive the message. Quit trying to debate before the word even comes out. Learn. We all can be educated. All of us. You're never too old to learn. And for 400 years, 400 years, there has not been a decade. There's not been a century. There's not been a year where a black man or woman life has not been taken by a white figure of authority. If you can name one, please let me know. Name a decade where it didn't happen in our history. So until we can address that, and you can address all those other things, that black on black crime, then we could talk about it. Until then, zip the lip, man. Shut that shit down, and let's talk about the issue that we have at hand. And with that said, I'm going to end this episode because I can go on and on and on and on. I don't want to talk your ears off. Man, I'm fired up now. I'm fired up. Let me calm down real quick. But hopefully you learned something from this. And I appreciate you guys bouncing with me, man. I appreciate the love and support. I got a lot of new friends friend requests after that protest. But, you know, they've been going to my normal page. So, anyways, if you guys are listening to this, please friend request me on the Bounce House and not my personal page. Because I don't want to be an asshole. But, you know, I like to keep my private life private. And so if you do want to friend request me, please friend request me at the Bounce House Podcast or One Surrender at the Bounce House Podcast. And I will always welcome you on the show. And if you love this episode and you enjoy what you're hearing, share with your family and friends. I'm going to probably try to do a live stream of this very same topic. I don't know. I'll try. Just depends if I can squeeze it in my schedule. But if not, please listen to this show and share it. And I thank you very much, man. Much love, you guys. I appreciate you. Again, thank you for bouncing with me. I'm your host, the only one, Surrender. Deuces.